the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site that comes from USA Today's NFL Wire. With me on the line is my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation's family of sites. And Seth is also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're in episode 381, the first of two Cardinals-Browns preview shows. This is our preview, picks, and prop bets, although we won't be very heavy on prop bets this time around because of so many injuries. Seth, my goodness, we are here, and wow. This is going to be a very uninspiring matchup this weekend, it looks like. Both teams are playing chicken when it comes to the quarterback position. The Cardinals get a taste of their own medicine as both the Cardinals and the Browns are saying they don't know who's going to be their quarterback. Kyler Murray, still on PUP, has been practicing. Obviously, we talked about the Josh Dobbs trade. Clayton Tune talking like he's the starter. My guess, Clayton Tune, I'm about 95% confident in saying that. While the Browns, they got Deshaun Watson back at practice on Wednesday with a limited participation tag. And if it won't be him, then it'll be P.J. Walker. But it feels like it's probably going to be P.J. Walker versus Clayton Tune, which is, that's border. Like, a game where we're supposed to get Kyler Murray versus Deshaun Watson, that's a premier quarterback matchup. If we get Clayton Tune versus P.J. Walker, that is shades of, you know, Ryan Lindley, Greg McElroy, Vinny Testaverde, Tim Rattay. That's the type of vibe this game is getting right now.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's not overly shocking on the Cardinals end, right? But it is a little bit surprising to see that Deshaun Watson's still struggling with that arm injury. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out for him because, you know, he tried to go against Indy, I believe it was, couple weeks ago and just couldn't do it and basically re-injured it. I talked to my buddy who's a physical therapist who I'm actually seeing right now, and he was like, you know, that's an injury that takes, like, if you're a pitcher, usually like 6 to 8 weeks. Like, it's not a full season thing, but it's like, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, get your, you know, get to feeling better. And, you know, obviously a pitcher and a quarterback throw differently, blah blah blah, but it's still throwing the ball, it's still in that, you know, shoulder scapula area, and you're having strain and issues on that. It's unfortunate. And then of course Murray, you know, we talked about it, like, does it make a lot of sense to play him in Cleveland against this defense?
And I know, you know, Gannon says it has nothing to do with who we're playing, but about him being ready. But I mean, this would sound like a crazy person to bring Kyler back, you know, with that defense, with James Conner out, Amari DiMercato been hurt all week, Michael Wilson hurt. You have no weapons for him. Zach Ertz is on injured reserve, not that he was doing a whole lot, but it would feel like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and, you know, so we end up with potentially P.J. Walker versus Clayton Tune. We end up with, you know, Jerome Ford versus Keontae Ingram, Tony Jones. So, I mean, the under is set at 37.5 right now, and I feel like that's an easy under unless we hear some positive growth from guys like DiMercato and Wilson heading into the game, because it's just getting to the point of, you know, absurdity, which is unfortunate, but what we kind of expected coming into this year in terms of, well, if the main guys aren't healthy, it's going to be ugly, right?
Yeah, this game's going to be rough. So let's kind of talk about what the Browns are. And the Browns are a banged up group. We understand how that goes. Obviously, we've been talking about the quarterback position, Deshaun Watson. He's played in four games this season. They're 3-1 in those games, but he hasn't looked good. Like, he hasn't looked anything like the Deshaun Watson in Houston. Now, I had an interesting conversation on one of the preview shows that's going to be coming on Saturday. I already recorded that one with Max Loeb over at the Believe in Browns podcast, who actually does the podcast with former Browns running back and returner Eric Metcalf, who played for the Cardinals for a year in 1998 as well. But he had an interesting take in the fact that he's always felt, and he said it for a long time, that Deshaun Watson's, like, his statistical parts were inflated from being on bad Texans teams that were always behind. And so some of the dynamic play, now what you saw, the eye test said great quarterback, but he hasn't even come close to that yet. Last year he looked pedestrian, and this year he's been average at best. Yeah,
banged up and average. And, you know, it's one of the things that I think a couple fans have talked about it, and obviously, you know, something that we have never really thought about it, but, you know, because we've never questioned whether Kyler Murray would be back this year. But it's an interesting, you know, it's interesting to look at it and say, hey, you know, this is basically what you're advocating for with, you know, not playing Murray for the full season, right? Like, obviously, if he's not healthy, that's a different conversation. But, you know, this is...
But Watson went a year and two-thirds without being in a football game.
And you know, if you don't play Murray this year, you're basically getting to that length of time, right? So why would you want to do... Like, you see how it can cause issues and potentially, you know, sabotage an otherwise talented team. And obviously the Browns had no control over Watson playing or not playing. And that's a conversation for another show that isn't, you know, talked about by Jess and I. But, like, you know, this whole, like, the whole idea that you're just going to come back in after sitting out a year plus and be like, oh, I'm the same guy, look at me go, is just a, I don't know. It's kind of funny to think that that's something that people really think can happen. Yeah, but you look at this, I mean, you look at this Browns team, their offense has been plagued by just unfortunate circumstances. Like we said, you brought up the Deshaun Watson situation.
Nick Chubb, oh my
gosh. Nick Chubb, thankfully the leg didn't die, which most people thought happened when they saw it live, right? Like, everybody was just like, well, he'll never play another down again, and you know, that may be just because of the injury itself, but it's one of those situations. And then from there, you know, Dorian Thompson Robinson was
awful in his start.
And that's, I think, another great kind of, hey, let's all kind of slow our roll a little bit, right?
Right, like, right. Because remember, the Browns traded Josh Dobbs to the Cardinals because of DGR's preseason.
Right, and then they had to be like, hey, guess
what?
Well,
and here's the thing. Remember how everyone was ready to just put Clayton Tune out there? Right. DGR had a way better preseason than Clayton Tune did. And as inconsistently and some of the bad play we've seen from Josh Dobbs, guess what? Tune isn't even at that level. I'll say this. Tune might hit some downfield throws better than Dobbs then. And even then, I was looking at some stats from Touchdown Wire that wrote up, gave a grade for the Vikings trade for Josh Dobbs, and gave it a B, that his deep throw numbers weren't off, like 11 for 30 completion, which wasn't terrible. And we know that if he'd have connected on three more, then we'd be looking at some elite numbers, but he was terrible, terrible in the intermediate throws.
And so that's, you know, and so that's what the Browns have dealt with. But on the flip side is they have a, you know, an elite defense, number one in yards, in defensive yards allowed in the NFL. I know some people don't like to use that metric, and that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but, like, they're phenomenal in every
but
phase.
But they're a top 10 defense scorings too. So as long as you get, as long as the disparity isn't like last week with the Cardinals, they only gave up 268 yards, but 31 points. That's, that's where yards don't matter because you're not stopping him. Yeah. That defense is so physical. And if you look at it, that's kind of what's kept them, because their offensive play has been pedestrian. Their quarterback play has been eh. Like, Deshaun Watson wasn't great. 4 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. The other two quarterbacks, 1 touchdown and 8 interceptions.
Yeah, and even last week, they lost the game simply because of a decision P.J. Walker made.
Yeah, Walker was picked off twice.
Well, and if you go back and watch that game against the Seahawks, they were – you know, they were leading 2017, and I think there was less than 2 minutes to go, and you know, they got picked off, and people are like, why are you throwing the ball? And it's like, well, like we talked about with Dobbs, like, at some point you have to be able to run your offense still. Like, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. You still need to be able to run your offense, and you know, PJ Walker hasn't allowed that to happen. You know, yeah, it was literally, I'm looking at the play sheets right now. It was literally 3rd and 3 with 2 minutes to go, and they threw the ball, and Julian Love intercepted it. So it was either the Browns win or not. And, that's happened. So, but you look at it, their defense keeps them in games, and they're obviously led by Myles Garrett, who's, you know, one of the, defensive players in the NFL.
This pass rush is different in the fact that Baltimore gets it from everywhere, and they led the NFL in sacks going to that game with 29. The Browns don't have as many. They have 20 sacks, and 8.5 of those come from Myles Garrett alone.
Yeah, and then, you know, Za'Darius Smith hasn't been what they had hoped he would be. Alex Wright hasn't taken that next step.
Okoronkwo has 2.5 sacks. So he's a speed guy. Like, like a third down speed rusher.
Yeah, and so you look at those guys, and you know, it hasn't been exactly what they were hoping for. But at the same time, when you have Myles Garrett, it doesn't matter, right? Like, you're just like, I got Myles Garrett. On the flip side, you know, they've got good defensive backs. Denzel Ward is elite. You know, Martin Emerson is coming into his own. And Greg Newsom's been a nice slot corner and a guy that's worked out well there for them. You know, and then they have good safeties in Grant Delpit and Rodney McLeod. And so they're just a talented overall. Or sorry, Juan Thornhill is their other safety. That's right. So Grant Delpit, Juan Thornhill. And they're just a talented group. You know, I would say their like weakest area is probably their linebackers. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is, you know, he's fine. He's not.
And Taki's fine as well.
Yeah. And then Anthony Walker. And so like they've got, you know, three guys that are super athletes, but I wouldn't say that they're, you know, elite linebackers like last week where you had Roquan Smith, who's probably the best linebacker in football right now. And then a very good Patrick Queen as well.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that we looked at last week with the Ravens is how they had their weakness in run defense. And we actually saw it. We saw that in the first half, is that the Cardinals were able to run the ball successfully. And it's what basically, you know, aside from the aided that first drive with that penalty on third down, that first third down, is that the ability to stay on schedule with the run game limited their pass rushing. Cleveland is a better statistical run defense team. In fact, they're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th in the league in rushing yards allowed, 96.7. So they allow less than 100 yards per game, but the yards per carry is right at 4 yards. So that's it. They're not shutting people down by any means. It will be interesting. I will say this: once you take the run factor out of Josh Dobbs, Clayton Tune is a very athletic quarterback, but I think he is stylistically. I think Dobbs took advantage of his, not only running ability, but his quickness. I don't, like, is Tune the quick athlete that Dobbs is. I know he can run, but is he more like a Josh Allen runner?
Right. And, you know, you look at it and you've got a really good front, but they're, like I said, they're a little undisciplined. They make up for it with athleticism. 15th in yards per carry against. So, you know, basically middle of the pack, which is fine. They thrive on getting guys in second and third and long. So, like, they are really aggressive early in downs to try to get you into that, you know, second and plus or third and plus six territory. And because then that way they can use their speed, athleticism, and then obviously Myles Garrett to come after you. So, like you're saying, like, you have to be able to get positive even 3 yards in first down and then 3 yards in second down, because, you know, third and four is a lot different than third and seven plus. And then, you know, on the flip side, on offense, we mentioned it earlier, you know, obviously the devastating injury to Nick Chubb, probably, you know, one of the best running backs of the past decade. He's just been, you know, otherworldly, and to see him go down with the injury he did was, you know, it was tough. And, you know, the last 5 years, you're talking about a guy that's consistently putting up 1200 yards, 1300 yards and 10 touchdowns. And so they went and, you know, they had Jerome Ford, he was their backup, and he's done a nice job, but he's obviously not Nick Chubb. and you can see that. I mean, last week in the loss to Seattle, 9 for 37, and their win over Indy in that, you know, shootout, he went for 11 for 74, but, like, he's not the big play guy threat that Chubb is. I mean, outside,
would you
of,
say that Ford is very, like, kind of in the same mold as a DeMarcado? Reliable.
Yeah, he is, and so that's what you get from him, and you see it consistently. And then they brought back Kareem Hunt, who's just kind of a shell of himself now, right? He's not the same guy anymore, and so you just look at it from that way. Pierre Strong is kind of starting to take a little bit more of those carries. He had 10 for 41 last week, the week before 8 for 25. And you look at what Kareem Hunt did, you know, he had 14 for 55. So yeah, he has more carries, but it's just, he's kind of turned into a plodding kind of goal line back, if that makes sense, you know, less than 4 yards a carry in every game he's played in the season. And like we do with Josh Dobbs, and even though he's been in Cleveland and stuff, you can be like, okay, you know, we'll take out the first two games where you're out of shape coming off the couch, and, you know, but San Francisco, good defense, obviously, 3.9 yards per carry. That Indy game, the other backs are averaging 5-6 yards a carry. He's averaging 3. And then, like I said, last week, he was under 4 yards a carry again. He's just not the same guy. And so they're trying to get a little more juice. And I think that's where Pierre Strong comes in. And you're noticing, like, we're talking about a lot of running backs because, as you mentioned, PJ Walker's been really bad. And I think it's one of those situations where we saw kind of a similar thing to what they're doing with what the Cardinals did with Josh Dobbs, outside of that Dobbs actually produced a little better. But you look at it, I mean, in the first two games, a win over San Francisco, he was 18 for 34. That's 53% with 2 interceptions, and they won that game. Against Indy, he goes sub 50% completions and throws an interception. They won that game. And then it finally caught up with him, you know, 15 for 31, sub 50% again. His first touchdown pass of the year, but 2 more interceptions, you know, and they lost that game. And really, they lost that game because of him and his inability to make plays in the passing game. And so I think what they're doing is just they're trying to preserve what could be with DTR as opposed to what is with PJ Walker. So we'll see how that goes, you know, because they still have talent at the wide receiver position. Obviously, they just traded Donovan Peoples-Jones, who was coming off a, you know, a career year last year. But they have Amari Cooper, who's a legitimate, true, you know, bona fide number one receiver, on pace for 1,000 yards again. David Njoku is a good tight end, a good athletic weapon. You know, he's averaging four catches per game, on pace for about 800 yards this year. And then you have Elijah Moore, who they traded. I can't remember what type of draft pick. I know they traded a draft pick for him. He was a second round pick of the Jets and never really blossomed there. Who could blame him? But he's never really, you know, found his niche right now. In Cleveland, you know, he's got 250 yards receiving on the season in eight games. You know, not great. It is what it is. But
well, you can think the passing numbers are underwhelming. Yeah. Just like with the Cardinals, honestly. It's
right.
It's very similar. Like, we know that, just, that Hollywood Brown is a very good receiver, and his numbers are pedestrian, but they should be much better.
Right. But you also look at it, and it's simple things. You know, like you said, it's, you look at what they did with Donovan Peoples-Jones last year. He had 840 yards receiving, and this year he had 97, and they traded him. And, you know, Njoku last year had over 600 yards. You know, he's got under 300 this year. You know, Moore's the only one that's kind of on pace for what he has been. But that doesn't change who these guys are. And Amari Cooper is a freak. I mean, Amari Cooper's, you know, a phenomenal, phenomenal wide receiver. You know, he put up over 1,100 yards last year. He's, you know, on pace again for right under 1,000 yards. But he just, and he's averaging almost 16 yards per reception. It's just that, you know, he has 30 catches on the season.
Yeah.
So it makes it really hard. And so, you know, this is a pretty simple game. And we say this every week, but if the Cardinals can ask PJ Walker to beat them, you have a chance. The thing is the thing that Cleveland does pretty well is that they're a good run blocking team. I don't know if is Joel Bitonio back or is he still out?
He was one of the guys on the injury report on Wednesday. Let me see if it's.
And then I know their other guy, I think, is hurting too.
He's good. He was a rest day yesterday. He had no designation today.
And then Jedrick Willis.
Let me see, Jedrick Wills. He upgraded. He was out yesterday, limited on Thursday.
Okay, so, I mean, that's the thing, is their offensive line is big, talented, and physical, and they run the ball well. And, you know, you go Jedrick Willis, Joel Bitonio, Ethan Pocic, Wyatt Teller, who's an all-pro, and then big DeJuan Jones, who's been a revelation as a rookie fourth-round pick. And, you know, it makes it tough, man. So that's what the Cardinals have to do, is they have to ask PJ Walker to beat them. They have to do a good job against the run and force PJ Walker to beat them, force PJ Walker to throw. And then you have a shot. It doesn't mean you'll win, but you have a shot. But at the same time, we look at it and it's easy to talk about, right? Like, can you do enough on offense against what is an elite defense?
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Syrah podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move a little bit about keys, matchups, and more. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syrah. We're back on the Rise Up Syrah podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Keys and matchups. Seth already brought up some, but obviously, I mean, offensively, especially when we're looking at Clayton Toon, we got no Amari DeMarcado. I mean, they have to somehow find some success running the ball, because the Cardinals will stand no chance if Clayton Toon has to drop back 40 times. Do they?
Oh yeah, that's a recipe for
well,
disaster.
Honestly, and we'll talk about predictions. This has the makings of a terribly ugly game that I think might only be enjoyed and not even enjoyed by the fans of the local teams. Like, Browns fans and Cardinals fans will be the only people who would ever watch this game.
Right.
And I even think many of them will be like, ugh, this is bad.
But it's also a game that, like, and we'll get to, like, there's just not a lot to even like bet on to like try to make it interesting, right?
No.
Like this is just a bad matchup between two teams that are kind of polar opposites, or I guess you could say the exact same.
Right now they are basically the same without, so like the Cardinals are a, you know, great value version defense of the Cleveland defense right now.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's kind of where it's at. Like, you just look at it and you go, I have no idea what to expect. You know, this is one of those games where you just kind of go into it and you say, okay, where does everything fit? And it starts, you know, up front. Can the Cardinals control the line of scrimmage enough to force PJ Walker to beat them? That's a legitimate question that has to be answered. And that means they need, you know, Zaven Collins, Victor Dimukeji. We haven't heard anything from Dennis Gardeck in a couple of weeks, right? He's been basically silent and stopped. And then Dante Stills has to continue to play well.
Yes.
If those things don't happen, then, you know, it's going to be one of those situations where you're going to see Jerome Ford run for close to 100 yards, and you're going to see Pierre Strong, you know, over 60 yards, and Kareem Hunt's going to run for 35 yards on 10 carries and 2 touchdowns. Like that's what it's going to look like if you can't, you know, make plays at the line of scrimmage. And then can Marco Wilson, Starling Thomas, Antonio Hamilton, Garrett Williams slow down Amari Cooper? That's really the only guy that's been a consistent, like you said,
yeah,
very similar to Marquise Brown, like legitimate true wide receiver ones, game changer type guys that just haven't had the quarterback play that they've needed to produce at the level that you would expect from a wide receiver one. And, you know, and again, I feel like Jalen Thompson, Kaiser White, Josh Woods, Buda Baker will do a good enough job on David Njoku, but can the Cardinals, that front 4/3, you know, create enough havoc in the run game? And, you know, then the flip side is, can the Cardinals do anything offensively? I mean, it's easy to say it's, you know, offense versus defense, but you look at it, you know, obviously the biggest one is DJ Humphrey's going to be able to hold up against Myles Garrett. I mean, we're talking about perhaps the premier pass rusher in the NFL, right?
Like, and in fairness, Garrett pretty much, like, he's over, he's at the edge on first and second down, but he's
inside, yeah.
All of those linemen are going to have to deal with Garrett, all of them.
Right, and so, you know, those are legitimate questions that have to be answered if we're going to see this team even compete. And you know, this is it's very similar to last week in terms of what we're looking at, but it's different in the sense of there's one guy. You know, there is Myles Garrett, and he's a freak, and he's been a freak every game. He hasn't had any issues this season, right? Getting his pass rush off and being the dominant force. So can the Cardinals find a way to slow him down? And that's not, you know, a negative thing. That's just a realistic thing.
Yeah, and that's where being able to find some modicum of success in the run game, so you're not 3rd-and-7, but you're 3rd-and-4.
Right, because you just can't. I mean, the reality is you just can't let him pin his ears back and go, because it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, a prime Trent Williams there. Like, that dude wins. And we saw
in the preseason that Toon will make a read mistake, like that one, the final preseason game when he just got leveled on a blitz, an unblocked blitzer that he just didn't know was coming.
Right. And, you know, again, that comes back to them being able to protect him, and that comes back to them being able to get him in position to be successful, and we'll see how that all works out. But, you know, right now it's been less than optimal, and so we'll see how they work it. But, you know, I think when you look at the whole situation. They're in a position where they could probably keep up, but like you said, it's gonna have to be a team effort. They're going to have to get something out of their run game. And if they're missing, you know, obviously if Kyler's not playing like we expect, and then they're missing Amari DiMercato, it's going to be a lot to ask these new guys, or guys like Keontae Ingram, who have not done it yet, to do it. And so that's what it's going to come down to.
I think an intriguing matchup, individual matchup to watch is Hollywood against Denzel Ward, assuming that he would be the one most likely to do it. Emerson is a possibility, but I think they like him more for size. And if it were Michael Wilson's playing, you like to see that matchup. It'll probably be Zach Pascal out there. We'll probably see a lot more tight end stuff. So Trey McBride, I think, then becomes really, really important in this game.
Well, and I don't think we expected or even understand what Michael Wilson has meant to this offense, even though his numbers are incredibly modest, because he is kind of the guy that gives them a big body play type of guy. And so we'll see, man. Like, it's a rough week to be very injured, right?
Yeah, well, both teams are ridiculous right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, we knew that this was happening, you know, for the Cardinals this season. But at the same time, we didn't expect it to be this drastic, right?
No. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time for predictions. Picks, predictions, and some minor prop bets. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Time to make our picks and predictions. If you had to pick, Seth, before we go to the score, how many turnovers do we have in this game combined?
I say four.
And both teams will have them. I can almost guarantee. I don't think there was a prop for turnovers, but
not yet, man.
But I feel this game is going to be mistake ridden. How many missed field goals? Will there be any missed field goals?
There are some props for fumbles lost.
Ah.
That's it, though.
I don't know.
So there's no interceptions or anything. They're probably not going to put them on the board this week. They're like, we ain't.
Well, until they know for sure who's playing quarterback, I think that's the
standard operating procedure. So I think when you look at it, you're going to see at least one Dustin Hopkins. You know, but again, like even in these games, we don't have any kicking props.
No,
Which is crazy.
Although, I was so, like, come on. like we've been hammering the kicking props, and then they're like, nope, not this week.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, there's a couple, you know, situations, and we'll see how this all kind of plays itself out. But I think right now, you know, it's like you said, it's going to be a sloppy game. There's still, you know, it's Cleveland. I was harping on it the other day. Weather in the Midwest is so much different here, but and there's, you know, a slight chance of rain, but it's definitely supposed to rain on Monday, which means it could rain on Sunday. And so you have to look at that and go, well, we'll see how it goes, because it's already going to be sloppy, right?
Yeah. Though, interesting fact, you know that the Browns have not beaten the Cardinals since 2003.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that both you and I think that changes this weekend.
Yeah.
And by the way, the games we've been most confident in losses in, we've been wrong, the Cowboys game, and then the
we thought that the Ravens were going to blow them out of the water.
And they just, like, didn't show up. And so we're very confident in what's going to happen, but, you know, they're – as much as it is a cliche, like the any given Sunday thing is real, because you're talking about you're talking about, you know, the human element of things. And so we'll see how that works out, because like you said, the kicking game kind of favors the Cardinals. The Cardinals have done a really nice job in terms of, you know, making it difficult the last 2 weeks on offense. I won't say they've done a good job offensive or defensively. I think that's strong, but there's been improvements, and they're making teams work harder to get what they're getting. Yeah. That being said, you know, we look at it.
So if there's an 8.5-point spread, I mean, we both feel the Cardinals will not win this game, but you think that the Browns cover?
And it is down to 7.5 on DraftKings right now.
It's still 8.5 on BetMGM. 7.5. That's interesting. Especially if it's PJ Walker, I have no confidence in the Browns offense to be able to pull away.
No, not whatsoever.
And so if we're at +8.5, I very much like the Cardinals at +8.5.
Yeah, and you look at it, it's a tough that. I don't think people realize how bad he has been to get to that, you know, to get to that part or that point where you and I are both like, ugh, like this is like, because it's a lot easier when you're talking about Geno Smith, who's, you know, has a record or a track record of playing extremely well, or you obviously have Lamar Jackson, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, those guys are easy to look at and go, oh, okay, this, you know, this guy's phenomenal. But on the flip side, to see PJ Walker over there, you're like, I just like, PJ Walker's gonna beat them? Like, come on.
He's
like,
done it before. He has 1-0 against the Cardinals.
Yeah. But that's the thing too, is like, that was a fluky thing.
that was the PJ Walker started but Cam Newton played game.
Yeah, and it was a fluky thing in the sense that that the Cardinals just didn't play well at all that game, right? Like, it was just a bad game. And so, you know, I look at it, I don't, seven and below I can see. So a touchdown gets you a push. Six, you know, and below, I can definitely see that. I'm even comfortable taking that. But man, over a touchdown, just the way that they've played, it just seems like a lot to ask, because you look at their wins with PJ Walker, and it's not like they're winning impressively.
It's one win. They've had one win when he started.
Right. No, because they beat the 49ers when he came in. He started that game, didn't he?
Against the Niners?
I thought he did, but maybe I'm wrong.
They are 3-1 when Watson starts, 1-1 when PJ starts. And so I'm guessing
he didn't start the Indy game. That's right. Because Watson got knocked out.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. But I mean, Watson played one series and threw an interception. So, my point being on that, and I know that San Francisco is a far superior team to Arizona. So it's kind of night and day, but you look at it, they won that game 19-17.
Won that because Jake Moody missed the field. Like, Brock Purdy having a terrible game took them down for a game winning field goal, and Moody just went.
And then you look at the next week, and they beat, even though there's a lot of points, and I don't think you and I see this happening, they beat Indy 39-38. And so you look at both of those situations, and you're not talking, you know, covering 8.5. And I know the Cardinals are bad. I'm not disputing that reality, but 8.5's a lot, man, for a team that has not won by more than that since week 3 in this season.
and that was their one game. You're like, oh, Watson might have it.
Yeah, and I don't even think – did he play that well that game? Yeah, he played well that game. Okay, that was his best game, you're right. But, yeah, I mean, outside of that, I mean, you're just looking at it and you're just – I mean – they lost the Ravens by four touchdowns. You know, and like I said, 3 points combined to beat San Fran and Indy. Like, it's not like, are they the superior team? I don't think you and I would dispute that in the least. I think we'd both be like,
honestly,
absolutely.
I think this game has a chance. Like, the Cardinals could win this game just because of how bad Cleveland's offense and if Clayton too does anything at all. I'm not predicting a win, but I do like the Cardinals to cover. In fact, I even like it, like, even if it's down to 7, I still like the Cardinals to cover. I think it's going to be a three or a four point game. Like, my personal pick is, I don't know which score to say. I don't want to say 21-17. I kind of want to say that, but that means 3 touchdown drives by the Browns. And I feel more confident in them doing 2 touchdown drives and 2 field goals. So either 20-17 or 21-17, but also that, which means I have no confidence in the total because it's set at 37.5. And right. I can't pick whether it's going to be 20-17, 37, or 21-17, 38. So if that total climbs up to 40, okay, if it climbs up to 40, 40.5, maybe 39.5, I'd be willing to hit the under on this game. But I think this will be just an incredibly ugly game, with both teams in 20-17, 21-17, one of those two scores, it'll be that. And both quarterbacks will look bad. And Toon will have a couple of moments, but I think overall it'll be you.
Yeah, and I think you're right on that. I do think that Cleveland wins and covers only because I'm thinking more about how they have looked on defense, and I think that, you know, starting a rookie in this situation, that they end up, you know, you do see some mistakes and they end up getting a defensive score. So I've got it 23-10, okay, Cleveland, with a defensive score. So, ooh, 2 offensive scores, or 1 offensive score, 2 defensive, or 1 defensive score, and then some 3 field goals.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's a lot of scoring drives. So in terms of props, there is, and I was, because I had to do that for our network article that we do every week for Touchdown Wire, where every editor makes a bet on the game related to the team. And there are no player props. Absolutely no player props right now because too many players are injured. Their status is just too up in the air. The one that I picked that I felt really good about, I feel really good about this one actually, and has really nice plus odds. It is both teams scoring 1 or more touchdowns in the first half. And if we just look back at the Cardinals trends, they've scored a first half touchdown in all games but the Rams game. So in 7 of 8 games, they've scored a first half touchdown. That's, feel confident about that. They have also allowed a first half touchdown in 6 of their 8 games. And so at +130, I really like that. That if of anything else, I'm like, that's a really good value for something that seems like a really good bet.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, and that's, you know, that's one to definitely watch. There are a few player props on DraftKings, and the only player props they're offering on DraftKings right now are touchdown scorers. So the first one I would look at, because one of the things I think you and I have been most impressed with this year is the opening script. We've seen them do an excellent, excellent job putting their offense or defense in a position to make plays early in a game. Now, after the opening script, yes, it's been ugly to unwatchable at times. However, the Browns are heavy, heavy number favorites to score the first touchdown. The Cardinals are much different. Amari DiMercato is still their top guy at plus 1,200. He may not even play. I don't know if you're going to see Marquise Brown or Trey McBride score the first touchdown. That seems like a lot to ask.
Is Toon mentioned in those?
He is. And so that's where I was going to go with this. So Keontae Ingram right now is plus 1,800. Rondell Moore is plus 1,800. And Clayton Toon is plus 2,500.
Ooh, those are juicy.
And so it's, you know, obviously something you want to bet very, very little on. Maybe $5 like max type of thing where you're, you know, winning $70 on a $5 bet, or, you know, if Clayton Toon hits $125, right? But the other one that I do like is Clayton Toon anytime touchdown in case the Browns do get the ball first and are able to kind of establish a run dominant thing. Clayton Toon anytime touchdown scorers plus 650. Ooh. So those both are intriguing to me. From there, I mean, you kind of got a lot of chalk. Like I said, if you want to do first touchdown for the Browns, plus 650 for Jerome Ford or Kareem Hunt is actually still a really good number. Just obviously you're not going to be able to get as much. I'm actually surprised. And so take a look at BetMGM if and when they put these player props up. Jess and I are guessing Saturday after inactives are announced. Once they confirm that, you know, Deshaun Watson won't play and that Kyler Murray won't play. But Kareem Hunt, 2+ touchdowns, plus 950, Jerome Ford, plus 1,200. I think that's a little low, especially for Hunt. You want to be plus 1,000 on any of those. So, you know, if you get that on BetMGM, I think that's a better one. But one I do like, Kareem Hunt, plus 3 touchdowns. And neither Jess or I think it's going to happen, but if they do score 3 touchdowns and they're methodical plotting drives and it's Kareem Hunt, he's plus 5,000. The Cardinals have given up 3 touchdowns to 2 players this year. So that's not necessarily a bad bet. Obviously Christian McCaffrey had 4, and then last week, Gus Edwards had 3. So it's definitely not the worst bet. And then, you know, you look at those, it's just, I think those are the nice ones. It's interesting because the Cleveland Browns defense special teams to score a touchdown, so something I've talked about, plus 2,200, or sorry, plus 550. So really, really, really not good juice on that, because you're talking about a defense scoring, even though I think it's going to happen. It's just, I don't like the return on that. So those are ones I like, you know, looking at it. But there's some intriguing lines.
I like the winning margin. There's a couple of bets I like, and if you want to take both to kind of hedge one against the other, Browns 1-6. That's like my range. Browns 1-6, which is plus 310, or Browns 7-12, which is your range of the victory at plus 350. Where if you make 2 even bets on either one of the, for both of those, then you're still hitting it about 155 plus 160 in those winnings. Assuming that the final score falls into that the Browns win by between 1 and 12 points.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is a strange week because we just don't have very much to go off of, right? And so when you look at it, you're guessing and kind of hoping, and we'll see how it works out, because this is the first week we haven't had a lot of props. So we're hoping next week when Kyler Murray's back officially that we'll see that flip. But for now, I don't, you know, it's not the best preview for the props that we could have offered, because there's just not very many to choose from, man.
There aren't. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. We have Max Loeb from Believe in Browns podcast network podcast coming up tomorrow. Seth and I will return on Tuesday night recording, which means you will get it likely on Wednesday sometime. This is episode 381. 481, I'm sorry, 481. And we're almost at 500 shows, Seth. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We will be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red.
Run!